Demigods and Supermen 287. Mains. It is because man is separate from man that he is not a god. To the degree that he overcomes the sense of separateness, he overcomes his humanness and rises to the state of I'm. Mortality, a state in which he comes proximate to the gods, converses with the immortals, and beholds those great causal principles which, like mighty pillars, sustain the universe in its appointed place. The sphere of the soul. The sphere of the absolute is here shown centered as a radiant power denominated the divine soul. While this soul maintains its equilibrium, spiritual consciousness remains unbroken. But by the soil inclining toward the extreme is created the illusion of the rational and irrational souls as a positive and negative poles. Chapter 13. Emersonc Oncept of Theo Versal. In every human nature abides a cyclopean self with whom, at long intervals, the mortal part of man communes. With this thought is introduced a new phase of Greek metaphysical speculation. The instructors in the mysteries declared that at birth each individual was assigned an invisible patron spirit, called the natal daemon. This entity was analogous to the totem of the North American Indians, except that the totem was invoked by prayer and fasting, while the daemon being coexistent with the generating soul itself became, as it were, the identity of the senses. By some this natal daemon was considered the personified aggregate of past experiences or the summation of previous lives. It was synonymous with the instinctive impulse nature, that inevitable product of existences, which stands behind and urges the issues of the outer life. This natal daemon is the composite self, the sum of countless previous selves, the personality compounded of multiple personalities, the thinking, feeling, and actuating sensory organ. Ism of material urge, the superphysical byproduct of temporal achievement. The natal daemon is the god who protects the fool, making it impossible for man to actually undo himself beyond redemption. It is the patron saint of the outer life, the intuitively sensed superiority, the intangible authority by which mortal man is given courage to assert his participation in a divine energy. According to the Egyptians, the natal daemon is created by the converging celestial Ravs at the time of nativity. It becomes the intangible cruise of dispositions, and through its agencies two individuals, though similarly organized, neither think nor feel the tim, but work out their diverging de tinis motivated by this demoniacal part. 289. 290 Lectures on Ancient Philosophy. Plato, writes Apuleius on the God of Socrates, asserts that a peculiar daemon is allotted to every man, who is a witness and a guardian of his conduct in life, who, without being visible to anyone, is always present, and who is an arbitrator not only of his deeds, but also of his thoughts. But when, life being finished, the soul returns to the judges of its conduct, then the daemon who presided over it immediately seizes, and leads it as his charge to judgment, and is there present with it while it pleads its cause. Hence, this daemon reprehends it, if it has acted on any false pretense, solemnly confirms what it says, if it asserts anything that is true, and conformably to its testimony passes sentence. All you, therefore, who hear this divine opinion of Plato, as interpreted by me, so form your minds to whatever you may do, or to whatever may be the subject of your meditation, that you may know there is nothing concealed from those guardians either within the mind, or external to it, but that the daemon who presides over you inquisitively participates of all that concerns you, sees all things, understands all things, and in the place of conscience do/els in the most profound recesses of the mind. For he of whom I speak is a perfect guardian, a singular prefect, a domestic speculator, a proper curator, an intimate inspector, an assiduous observer, an inseparable arbiter, a reprobator of what is evil, an approver of what is good, and if he is legitimately attended to, sedulously known, and religiously worshipped, in the way in which he was reverenced by Socrates with justice and innocence, will be a predictor in things uncertain, a premonitor in things dubious, a defender in things dangerous, and an assistant in want. He will also be able, by dreams, by tokens, and perhaps also manifestly, when the occasion demands it, to avert from you evil, increase your good, raise your depressed, support your falling, illuminate your obscure, govern your prosperous, and correct your adverse circumstances. The natal daemon is declared by Olympiodorus to be the supreme flower of the soul, for it is the blossoming of soul qualities. To a certain extent, the soul is generated from the interplay of action and reaction in the sphere of sense. The Emerson's concept of the Oversoul 291. Soul is the garment woven from the threads of incident. The natal daemon is consciousness born of experience, the realization begotten of necessity. The natal daemon is the diamond soul, the transmutation of corporeality into incorporeality, the regeneration of bodily quantities into bodiless qualities. For the natal daemon is the wholeness of consciousness which must ever result from the coordination of heterogeneous parts. In the terms of mathematics, the natal daemon is the spirit of the number 6, which is invoked by the coming together of 6 monads and is inseparable from them as long as they continue to constitute a unit or wholeness. The natal daemon must therefore be regarded as the consciousness of the senses conceived as a monad and established at the summit of the pyramid of sense, from whence it flows downward to tincture with that understanding based upon experience the entire structure of the corporeal perceptions. The philosophers declared that a natal daemon, or familiar, is assigned to every man, with whom it remains until the rational soul, having been elevated above the sphere of the senses and having achieved comparative illumination, turns to the contemplation of superessential verities. Upon one who had achieved this distinction, the Greeks conferred the appellation of hero. A hero was one who had heroically turned from the contemplation of the temporal to the contemplation of the eternal, and consequently was dedicated to the service of the gods, gazing rapturously upon the faces of the ungenerated ones. The heroes verge towards certain divinities with more ardor than to others, thus expressing the innate preferences of their dispositions. The heroes, therefore, were divided among the orders of the gods, each serving his own preference and by degrees coming to be identified with the qualities of his chosen deity. As the gods themselves are incapable of descending into the corporeal sphere, they incline toward it through their vassals, the heroes. As a result, certain men have come to be revered as divine incarnations and the creative principles venerat under their similitudes. Unable to discern that the hero is not a god, the non-philosophic have befogged the issues 292 lectures on ancient philosophy of theology, with the result that men have become the war shippers of men and have propitiated mortal heroes before the superessential gods. While ordinary mortals, being as yet rationally unawakened, depend largely upon their natal daemon, the heroes, or those already approaching liberation, are the beneficiaries of a more exalted genius, denominated the essential daemon. The father star of the Neoplatonists is this essential daemon, into whose nature the natal daemon has been merged by a process in which the lesser is mingled with the greater, and their issues become one. The essential daemon is unapproachable by him who is still a servant to his sense perceptions. Nor can the essential daemon descend into man, but as a silent watcher must brood over the irrational soul until, emerging from its chrysalis of materiality, it spreads its spiritual wings and soars swiftly to the source of its own light. In Homer's Odyssey, Ulysses is revealed to be immortal, aspiring to the estate of a hero, which end he attains by his perilous voyagings through the seas of temporal uncertainty. As the senses must be mastered before that which is above the senses can be liberated, one of the labors of Ulysses was the blinding of the Cyclops. This giant signified Ulysses' own natal daemon, his self-will, whose power must be destroyed before divine will could be seated in its place. The Cyclops is, therefore, a monster of the astral light, the shadowy giant who abides amid the shadows of man's own being and whose single eye is the pineal gland, the only organ with which he discerns the outer universe. But it is possible for the eye of the natal daemon to see two ways. By turning inward, it ceases to serve the Cyclops, and fixes its gaze upon the splendid features of the essential daemon who, abiding in the sphere of pure intellection, is the father star, the pole star by which the mariner of life steers the bark of his own soul into the safe harbor of divine perfection. The philosophy of daemons is the outgrowth of man's natural veneration for the rationality manifest in every order of life and form. The very clouds scudding across the sky exist by virtue of the intercession of rational intelligence, and upon fulfillment of their destiny are dissipated by the activity of this self-same intelligence. A peculiar providence equips every organism with the instruments of its own survival. The plant's vital seed is protected by a stalwart husk, and the life of the crustacea by its defensive shell. The urge that causes irrational nature to act in a rational manner we call instinct.